And here we go, folks. Round one's upon us. The NBL is about to begin for 2025-26. Welcome to the Roundtable. It's our second program for the season, and it's our first game week. The picks are back. We're going to go through each game this weekend. Plus, as always, there's a little bit kicking around in the NBL because, as always, Matt McQuaid, breaking up is hard to do, particularly when you didn't seem to really like each other in the case of Kendrick Davis and Montrezl Harrell. How are you, mate?
I'm very well, Julian. Good evening. And, yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Yeah, breaking up is hard to do. And this sort of has been carrying on probably a bit longer than we all expected. You know, you would have thought they would have all moved on by now, but clearly not. Clearly there's a lot of bad blood there, which, you know, we'll get into in a moment. It makes for some interesting viewing, if nothing else.
So we'll start with this because it immediately just makes you circle on the calendar. Adelaide and Sydney this season, whenever they meet, particularly the first meeting, it was always going to have a bit of feeling about it before this even blew up this week, especially when you add in the fact that this was the play-in game last year. So it's just taken that and dialed it up, but it's that external drama that the NBL provides. It just rackets it up a little bit extra, and now we're all talking about Sydney and Adelaide on the eve of the season, and it's just a shame that they're not meeting this weekend. It's October 11th. We have to wait till.
Yeah, Julian. So thankfully, we don't have to wait all that long. I mean, it's the 11th of October, so that's round four at the Adelaide Entertainment Centre, which will be heaving. And you can imagine those fans and the kind of things they're going to be saying to Kendrick. He's going to be getting it with both barrels. There is no question about that. And then it will be interesting in kind when Adelaide visits the Kings at Kyrgios Bank Arena. Albeit, one of the games they'll be playing against the Kings is actually the Ignite Cup. And right now the venue is to be confirmed. So we don't know where they'll be playing that. Nonetheless, yeah, I kind of have mixed feelings about it. On the one hand, it's obviously something that you and I and a lot of, you know, pundits talk about. And that is that, you know, the NBL is always more interesting when you've got a little more spice, a little aggression, a little hatred, a little bad blood, as this clearly is. So from that perspective, because it draws people in, it's a story, it's, you know, I suppose it's interesting. And then, you know, there's the whole back and forth between, you know, two guys that are well known in their short time in Australia for being extremely forthright with their opinions. And you've got, you know, one player acting like kind of the jilted lover, and then the other one sort of saying, well, we're past you, pal. You know, we've got a completely brand new group, and, you know, we're in love with the guys that we've got here, so you just do what you do, and good luck to you. But and then the kind of back and forth starts. But so from that point of view, I suppose it's interesting. The other thing I would say, though, and this is where I'm kind of torn on the whole thing, is I do wish Kendrick could just leave it alone. You know, and obviously there was that talk about the Kings media ban on him. Whether that's true or not is up for debate. But, you know, it's obviously that there has been a directive for him to kind of cool it a little bit. I think he's moved. He should have moved on by now. He's with a brand new team. You know, he's by all accounts fitted in well, as I said last week. So I kind of think, okay, leave it alone now. It's done. Let's just get on with the business of winning basketball games. And look, let's face it, there's a lot of pressure on this team this season because they've not made the semifinals two straight years, and that's not good enough for the kind of money that's spent on that program, the building they play at, the best and the biggest in the league, and the crowds they've been getting. It's, you know, I've said it, it's certainly championship or bust for this program. So hopefully Kendrick has said what he said, got it off his chest, and now can concentrate on helping lead the Sydney Kings to some Ws and to, you know, championship contention.
Why the need to say it, to pump yourself up like that in a one-on-one battle when you're going to go in a season to play everybody else? Why focus in on one guy?
Yeah, it was a bit strange, as I said. I mean, he I don't know about – if you're talking about Kendrick, I mean, I don't know whether he's focused specifically on Montrez. I think Montrez was just the guy that snapped back, you know, well and truly. And yeah, he said his truth. Kendrick said his truth. And as we so often realize, the actual reality is somewhere in the middle, right? So, yeah, look, again, it's theater. I think it's a bit of theater in all honesty as well. As I've said before, I think there are two sides to this. The side that you want that theater, you want that drama, you want that interest, you want the fans pumped up. Some people may say artificially, which I completely understand because I've seen it before with the NBL. But if there's legitimate bad blood, it's you know, it adds to the intensity of the matchups. And it adds to the crowd and how they react, particularly in Adelaide. I mean, we know, look, Sydney's always been not quite public enemy number one over there, but pretty close. And this just can add to it. So they'll sell it out in 2.0 seconds. There'll be 10,000 people or close enough to it at the Adelaide Entertainment Centre for that round four matchup. And you know, I mean, it sells itself anyway because it's Bryce Cotton versus Kendrick Davis for one. It's, you know, Xavier Cooks going up against Montrezl Harrell. It's, you know, the hated Brian Georgian against the Adelaide faithful. So it's a fantastic matchup anyway. And I think this little beef just adds a little more spice to that.
October 11th, folks. So we don't have to wait long, and that's going to be in Adelaide. So get your tickets if you haven't already. Make your plans to go over if you haven't already, if you're listening in Sydney. And let's just sit back and enjoy and see what happens next, because heaven knows that first possession, I just look, imagine Davis coming in on a curl cut and waiting for him at the low block is Montrezl Harrell. Just let it go. Just let it go. Before we continue on with our agenda for this program, I wanted to bring to your attention, Matty. And this is without notice, and I love doing one or two of these at a program because I love getting your reactions on the fly here.
That's, of course.
Giving a little bit of the secret sauce as to why this thing has worked now for several years. Derek Rucker's top 15.
D-Ruck, yep.
It's caused some debate, as it does every year.
All the time, yep.
And speaking of our friend Mr. Davis, he mentioned that was bulletin board material for him to motivate himself to having the season that he had last year, the fact that he wasn't in the top 15 going into last season. But, I mean, how does this read to you? Cotton, Davis, Howell, Jackson Cartwright, McVeigh, Cooks, Golding, Luala Chul, Harvey, Prather, Magnay, Doolittle, Hamilton, Schofield, and Cheatham. Couple of notable absentees right away, and the first one that's been screamed at is no Matthew Dellavedova. The guy who officially is last year's grand final series MVP.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a bit of an odd one for me. And look, you know, I think Derek does a great job and in the media, and, you know, he knows he's going to cop an absolute bucketing from a lot of people for the people that he leaves out, and then the people who believe that, you know, certain guys should be ahead of other guys on the list and what it might be. It is kind of interesting. That's one. There are others. And look, at the end of the day, I think this one was really tough because he's not only got to go and have a look at who he thinks right now based on what he's seen in the league, as in, you know, last year, the end of last year, into the finals, and then projecting it forward. He's then got to try and project forward a crop of players, which we talked about last week with Boddy Notch, may be one of the greatest crop of imports coming into this league that we've ever seen. Simply for the fact there's no one that you kind of look at and say in 6 weeks' time they're going to be looking for your replacement, or midway through the season they're going to move you on and get someone who's going to be a more impact type of player. There just isn't that guy. So that tells you how strong the competition is becoming, and that it could be Now, we even flagged it last week, and I know Brian Gorgian said it. He thinks it's going to be the closest competition in history, and he might be right. Now, part of that is obviously looking at all these guys coming into the league who we don't know what sort of impact we can only project. So, for example, you know, Mason Jones could be the MVP candidate. And, I mean, look, I'm basing that not so much on the one game that he played already, which was highly impressive, which we'll get to in a moment, but more his background and the type of player he is and the responsibility that will be on his shoulders. You know, you could look at that. You could, Joe Lewala-Chool could have a massive impact. And I know I've spoken about two Perth players, but then, you know, you kind of look at Isaiah Brockington. You look at the three Tasmanian imports. You look at Will Magnay and what he means to that Tasmanian program. You know, Tyson Walker, we talked about, could be an MVP candidate. So he's, you know, he's on a, it's a tough job, man. So I don't envy him at all. I can have some quibbles here or there about, you know, where guys are situated on the 15. But look, it's a bit of fun at the end of the day, and it sparks debate, and that's what it's designed to do. And as I said, I think D-Ruck does a fantastic job, and in doing that in his commentary, and long may it continue as far as I'm concerned. And look, if people want to get upset about it, hey, yeah, it's all part of the reality show. Copyright Larry Kestelman.
I know that there's plenty of complaints about as far as the way that, you know, the NBL manufactures stories and the way the broadcast is structured about getting clickbait material and getting stories. Yep. D-Ruck isn't one of your worst defenders. He's wide up the other end, I think, of that scale.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, no, I mean, he's not
the guy to get mad at, folks.
No, and he's not doing it there for the proverbial and giggles. I mean, he's doing it because it's what he believes and his particular analysis. Now, you can disagree with it or agree with it, but it's not, yeah, look, I guess you could make the argument it is by nature clickbait when you say, you know, that people are always, it's the great debate, isn't it? You know, the LeBron versus MJ debate. Before that, the Larry Bird versus Magic Johnson debate. You know, and people, who's the best? And, you know, who's top 10 all time? And who's top 5 all time? And et cetera, et cetera. People love that stuff. So, but he does it, you know, with genuine analysis and what he believes as he projects forward, also looking back, but also projecting forward. And look, we know this too. When he redoes it, which he'll do at the end of the season, there'll be massive changes. There will be. Maybe not at the top. Maybe Bryce will stay number one, but that's because he's Bryce Cotton. And we think this Adelaide team is going to be something special offensively. So there's going to be a lot of numbers from that team this year. So it'll be interesting to see how much it does change, actually. And there will be people that will come in and out of that top 15, I'm sure.
As far as actual top 15 rosters, or Canes would probably wish they had 15 players to choose from at the moment, because they've had to make a late import change. Unfortunately, the old Border Patrol has got one.
Yeah, it's just as we thought, wow, they've got everything lined up. They've recruited incredibly well. We've already waxed lyrical about that. Everything's looking good. And then all of a sudden, the old visa complications rear their ugly head. And it's cost them their original point guard, Ashton Hagans. You know, I think that's it's a big loss, because he was a guy. Fortey's talked about him elsewhere in terms of, you know, very defensive oriented, you know, very much more of a facilitator than an outright scorer. And in that team, they probably didn't need more of a scorer. They needed more of a guy that was going to lead the way defensively, be an absolute, you know, nightmare on the perimeter against some of the great guards of this league. So losing Ashton is a big, big loss. So they had to scramble to a certain extent. But, look, they picked up a guy. I mean, what a name, Andrew Andrews. You got to love it, haven't you? Andy Andrews, my goodness. AA, as I'm sure he'll come to be known. Decent size. He's 32 years of age, has been around the block. to say the least. I mean, he's played in Turkey, he's played in Spain, he's spent a little bit of time in EuroLeague, he's played in Israel. He's one of those guys that, have basketball will travel. He's extremely well traveled and, solid, more of a scorer, probably more of a two guard than a one, which is what they need. Can facilitate though, and has put up some, he put up some great numbers in college, admittedly, University of Washington, which was a long time ago from 2012 to 2016. And ever since then, he's traveled the world. So, it's going to be tough for him to sort of fit in immediately. And we already talked about the fact that if there was one, not necessarily a weakness, I call it a concern, is that their backup guards, Kyle Edmund's going to be relied upon heavily. And, has done some great things, as we know, and has been a great servant. But it'll take a little time for Andrews to kind of fit into this group. And then so Cairns, they might be off to a slower start than we all thought. But, I'm sure Ford's a great coach. I mean, he's going to make the appropriate adjustments and he'll get this guy up to speed fairly quickly.
But Wally Bales is back in the NBL, back with the Illawarra Hawks this time.
Really happy about it. And, I kind of alluded to it last week. I think, had the situation with the Kings, he was signed as one of the Indigenous players it didn't end well. And he left the club under, it was Chase Buford. And that was one of the championship teams and he wasn't a part of it at the end of the day. There was some stuff that went on behind the scenes, which I won't go into, but needless to say, the team felt they needed to make a break with him. And it was really unfortunate because he's exceptionally talented. But look, over the last couple of years, I think he's grown personally. He's definitely grown as a basketball player. You'll probably never meet a more confident player, almost to the point of arrogant, but man, he can back it up though. Yeah. I've seen a lot of him in NBL One East for the Sydney Comets. But this is a guy, that recently went over and played in the NBA Summer League in Vegas, unfortunately hurt himself, but did contribute, when he did play minutes. And I'm a huge fan of him and he's got the right people in his ear now. He couldn't have gone to a better program. The defending champions, Justin Tatum, has just made a habit of making guys better. And he'll fit in perfectly as another guy who's going to be bring that spark, that energy, that intensity off the bench. Fits into that program beautifully. And he's a backup, sure, but I think, the more he gets his opportunity, the more he'll be able to impact ball games. And he was outstanding this year in NBL One East. He really was, and thoroughly deserved his call up to the NBA Summer League. So, and acquitted himself well. And, nothing but the best for him. And, it's exciting. It's, I'd look at it again from an NBL One East perspective. I'm obviously a nut about it. And, it's just great to see someone going from that into an NBL deal. It's a 2-year deal with the second year of club options. So, he's got a bit to prove, and I'm sure that JT is going to get the best out of him.
Staying with the Hawks, they had a behind closed doors, I don't know if you call it a scrimmage or full blown game against the Sydney Kings. A bit coming out of that, wasn't there, Matt?
Yeah, so there was a piece written in Code Sports by Matt Logue and Mick Randall about the fact that JaVale McGee, the Hawks weren't happy with how JaVale was being defended physically, and there was a suggestion that he was being, quote, targeted. And, of course, that raised the hackles of one A. Bogut, who went on Twitter and blasted the living hell out of Mrs. Logue and Randall for the piece. And I think, when I read it, I thought it was more to do with something that I've always said, and that is, you know, you want big guys to be officiated correctly at this level. Unfortunately, a lot of the time, it's historic, it's there. NBL referees haven't officiated big guys very well, you know, to the point where we've seen over-fouling, you know, or over-calling fouling, I should say, you know, and allowing certain things to go on unchecked. And sort of robs, you know, the public of seeing the skills of these guys, and particularly JaVale McGee, who's a very skilled big man at 7 foot tall, you know, not just athletic, not just huge with a wingspan and everything, but he's very talented and could tear this league to pieces, quite frankly. I mean, you know, he's still got a bit to give, I think. You know, he's not what you consider horrendously old by any stretch. The question mark, obviously, with him has been the viruses he's had, and particularly the pneumonia and the lung problems, and that's a bit of a watch, obviously, because they really at this stage can't afford him to go. They need him, you know, desperately because of Sam Froehlich not being there for an unspecified period of time. It's got to be a few months at least, and then obviously Lachlan Olbrich now in the NBA. So yeah, it was a bit of the classic Illawarra Sydney back and forth. Again, just add more spice to a matchup that Illawarra has completely and utterly dominated over the last, 2 years. So they swept the Kings last year, 4-0. I think the year before it was 3-1. Justin Tatum's never lost to Brian Goorjian in a game. And the Hawks are the defending National Basketball League champions. So, it's their big brother right now. And, there was always going to be a little bit of back and forth, even in it, as you said, what was a closed-door session with, I don't know if there was any scores taken. But, yeah, I mean, the crux of it was essentially Hunter Goodrick. So, for those who don't know, Hunter Goodrick is a big man, averaged a double-double for the North Bears in NBL 1 East this year. 6'8", 6'9". So he's been trialing for the spot that was left, you know, vacant by the season-ending injury to Kelly Laupepe, which, you know, I find interesting. So clearly the Kings not looking at this stage to go down the import route that we spoke about. It may be, I think, that they're probably going to wait till mid-season by the looks of things now. Unless, you know, something comes out of nowhere, but it doesn't appear so if Goodrick's in there trialing for that, big man spot. And, so he was apparently the Hawks didn't like how he was defending JaVale McGee, but as Andrew Bogut pointed out, that it was just all about a guy who's fighting hard for a spot in the NBL. So he was going to do everything he could and work his butt off to get there. So good luck to him.
So we're going to be waiting for the Kings. Are they not going to be making a move with an import spot? I feel like we've been here before just recently. I don't think it worked out too well. That always concerns me. If when we're playing that game, will we pull the trigger or not? And it goes into mid-season. Oh, we'll wait. We'll wait another week.
Yeah.
It's from my experience, it's never worked out well when they play that game. And it's not just the Kings, anyone.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's across the board, but this is pure. I mean, look, you know, I can say it. It's purely financial. That's what it is. And I spoke about it last week, Julian, that I felt like they needed to get someone in, you know, that was an impact player now that could add to what they've already got, particularly up front, you know, and that was going to cost a lot of money. And it was always going to be the question mark whether the Denims were prepared to spend that kind of money, because we're talking, it's not just, as we've spoken about, it's the fact that because they signed Bolqual as a marquee, it basically restricts what you can do from an import perspective. So while other teams are able to go out and get three imports and they built their team, you know, in a particular way that allows them to do that, the Kings, you know, and if none of this would probably be an issue had Bolqual been the kind of impact player that they were expecting. But just hasn't worked out. And as we've talked about, so now you've got this situation where you lose, you know, your key backup big, and a guy who could probably start for a bunch of teams as well, and you lose him preseason, and then you're locked into this, you know, this marquee contract that's giving you really nothing, you know, and it's just unfortunate. So I think that's what we're looking at. I think that this current Kings hierarchy is clearly not prepared to spend, at least not initially. It's obviously going to be cheaper to do it mid-season if you do pull the trigger eventually, because you're not paying, you know, you're not paying a full year salary for someone. So, and as I said, yeah, the only type of player that's worth getting is someone who's going to make an impact. Because if you're just getting, if you're just doing what Tasmania did last year, for example, you know, with Ian Hummer, which was an absolute, that, I mean, the guy wasn't NBL standard. You know, I'm sorry to say, he wasn't. And then it's kind of like, what's the point?
I'll ask you this. Brian Goorjian, the vision that he would have been sold versus the reality of what he's experienced, how far apart do you think that they are?
Yeah. Look, I'm not, you know, I'm not behind closed doors. So it's, you know, and I'm not privy to any of those conversations that he would have had with when he was signed by Paul Smith and Chris Bondgrass, and obviously, you know, Bogut and Longley were involved in that, Paul Kind. And then, you know, so he was there when, you know, the Denims then took over. So it's hard to say, you know, I mean, I can't imagine that he would look around at some of the other clubs, and he's talked about this and how everybody seems to have loaded up this year. Not that the Kings haven't. You know, I mean, people might be screaming, what about Kendrick Davis, Matthew Dellavedova? Absolutely. I completely agree. But then, you know, we've got a marquee that averaged less than 6 points a game, can't create his own shot, can't get to the foul line, and is dealing with a chronic knee injury, and is paid as a marquee. So, you know, that's where the Kings, unfortunately for them, and again, it's decisions have been made. I mean, look at the thing. I think it really comes down to another thing as well, which I haven't spoken about, is that the Kings have lost three guys. It's not talked about, which I find fascinating, over the last couple of years, that they would absolutely kill to have in their team right now. Jordan Hunter, Angus Glover, and Dejan Vasiljevic. And they left for different reasons. But those are three quality Australian players that they got rid of, and you bring in a Bolqual, you bring in an Isaiah Liafa, who's now gone. Has it worked so far? No. They should have, in my opinion, they should have worked exceptionally hard to keep those guys. And there were reasons for their leaving, obviously. And we all know that, you know, the background behind the whole Dejan Vasiljevic story, where he got the release, then he came back, and he then wanted a release from the Kings, and it was this whole back and forth, and there was a lot of, again, bad blood that between the two parties. But I think when you look at that and you look at who they brought in to replace, they haven't adequately replaced those guys, Jordan Hunter in particular right now. I mean, you know, that the Phoenix got two outstanding players. And by the way, championship players and guys that, you know, were foundations of that program when they were here, and quality guys as well. So, you know, I don't think the Kings have recovered from that, in all honesty. And because, you know, those are two boys that do all the right things. And as I said, a quality human beings that you need in your program. Now, I'm not casting aspersions on the decency of anybody that's in the Kings program currently. I'm just saying those two guys, and DJ for that matter, and I know people have got their thoughts about DJ and, you know, who he is as a person. I mean, I personally, you know, rate him extremely highly, having dealt with him for, you know, an extended period of time. But, you know, you just can't afford to lose great Australian talent like that. And if you don't adequately replace it, then you got some problems.
stay with the Kings for a minute, because they have been rated particularly highly with the preseason predictions that were put out by the NBL broadcast team. Everybody's putting out their predictions. We put out ours last week. But the Sydney Kings, despite these glaring issues as far as injuries and that spot on the roster, very popular as far as making the top four. 9 out of the 14 have the Sydney Kings in the top four, and 5 have the Adelaide 36ers winning the championship, which I find interesting that so many people are loading up on Adelaide winning the title or finishing top two when, yeah, they're full of star talent across the board, but we don't know how this team's going to gel, and there are question marks on the guy who's going to be tasked with bringing it all together. And the Sydney Kings, despite this glaring problem, a lot of love for the Sydney Kings to finish in the top four. I find it interesting that interesting is one word. I find it overblown, because you can't honestly tell me that the Sydney Kings, as they're currently constituted right now,
yeah,
barring Davis going Super Saiyan and Dellavedova reverting to 2016 Delhi, can be a top four side with those issues. And it's no knock on either of them. And the Adelaide 36ers, we don't know yet if all of those egos in that side, and there's a lot of healthy egos in this team, are going to come together, especially from the fact that we started this program with remnants of what happened last year at the Adelaide 36ers with the same coach and same management team in place. Too many unknowns.
Look, I agree with you. I was shocked. You know, I don't know, to be fair, I don't know when they actually did cast their votes in the first place. And again, look, I was doing it for years and I'm still doing it. You know, everybody's got their opinion. Everybody's entitled to their opinion. People get upset about opinions probably a bit too much sometimes, especially with this kind of stuff. But I must admit, I kind of did shake my head, and I'm wondering when they actually cast their vote, whether it was before the news about Kelly Laupepa and we're only getting it now, or after. If it was after, then wow. You know, I said last week, I've got at least 5 teams ahead of the Kings in the pecking order, because that frontline issue is not going away, particularly if, you know, they're looking at a young guy, and he's a good solid player, but again, he's not going to change life for you. And I know I probably overused that expression, but it's true. You know, that he's not going to be a guy that's going to make an impact, you know, Hunter Goodrick. And he's a good solid player at NBL 1 level. But if that's the guy you're bringing in to replace a Kelly Laupepe and partially replace Jason Spurgeon, well, yeah, I don't know what to tell you. It's not going to change anything. And, you know, they've had issues rebounding the ball. They've had issues defending the interior. And we talked about it. You know, that look, they've got quality guys in Jalen Galloway, that Mikuch Malawach as well. They've got some really good wings. Bulkwal is yet to be seen. And then obviously you bring in an incredible backcourt that's going to make everybody around them better. So that I guess you can sort of look to. But then, you know, the whole situation with Xavier Cooks we talked about. He's got a lot to prove as well. Again, it did surprise me, and probably what even surprised me even more. Only 3 people of that 14 think that that the Illawarra Hawks are going to make the final four.
That's ridiculous.
I mean, that's, wow. I mean, it's a hell of a lot of disrespect for the defending champions who, look, I did say I think they did lose some really key pieces. You know, Trey Kell, Lachlan Ulbrich, HJ Lee. No doubt about that. And obviously the question mark about Sam Frolingham when he comes back. But considering who the head coach is, reigning coach of the year, championship winner, what he's done for that program in a short space of time has been extraordinary. Going out and getting a JaVale McGee who's still got a lot of tread left in the tires, in my opinion, and who, fully fit, could have a similar impact at least at the defensive end of the floor. But he's very good offensively, as I said. But particularly at the defensive end of the floor is what Andrew Bogut did when he came to the Kings. So you get him, Ja'Cory McLaughlin, you sign him to be the leader of your second unit, which is a very solid second unit regardless. And again, it's championship proven. And then you've got a Will Dave O'Hickey, who is emerging as one of the superstars of this league, who has the ultimate confidence, alongside a Tyler Harvey, who played some of his best basketball that he's ever played last year, that, oh, by the way, will be an Australian soon, allowing them the opportunity to go out and get yet another import, if they so choose, in the same way that Adelaide does. So that shocked me, that only three people think that the defending champions are going to finish in the top four this year. I think that's absolutely crazy. So that more than, even more than the Kings, 10 people saying the Kings are going to make, or nine people, sorry, that are going to make the four, that only three people think Illawarra is going to make the four? Really? Okay. And one person thinks Brisbane's going to make the four, which, yeah.
No.
I don't think so.
They're not making the seven. If they were, they'll be lucky to make the 10.
But then, to be fair, that person, her husband plays for the Bullets.
Well, so, I mean, yeah.
Ariana Prather. It's like Brad Rosen picking the Kings all the time. Yeah. And Brad, and by the way, Brad was an honorary Hawkhead for a while. He's going to lose his privileges because he didn't pick Illawarra in the four. So look out, Bradley, when you go down there and you're there every game. So
yeah. Well, in that like case, that's different. Yeah. Brisbane Bullets. I picked them to make the top 10 this year. I think they'll have a strong season. before we get into the picks for round one, just a couple of points. So one on a particularly sad note, the basketball community has lost someone truly special both on and off the court.
Yeah, Tiana Mangekar here at age 30. passed away due to obviously from her battle with cancer, which, was famously began when she was at Syracuse University and discovered she had breast cancer. And that was 10 years ago, and she's been fighting it ever since. And it's made a couple of different comebacks and from time to time. And then, while dealing with chemotherapy and all the rest of it and the radiation treatment, and everything else. And, she was an inspiration to so many people, the way she constantly battled this horrendous thing. And unfortunately, it took a life ultimately. And for those who knew her, I didn't really know her that well. I know people who know her and people call her an angel. That's the type of person she was. And it's just devastating. It's far too young and far too young to have to deal with something like that. It's been borne out by the outpouring of emotion and grief and across the world, it was reported on ESPN in the United States. Obviously Syracuse paid tribute to her. Clearly the work she did in Sydney with the Flames and as a player and then as an assistant coach. And, it's just devastating. What can you say? The Kings season launch is actually Wednesday. And, when I say the Kings, it's actually the Kings and the Flames. So it's the Hoops Capital season launch on Wednesday. And it's cast a bit of a cloud over it. I think, it's season launches are meant to be, it's a time of hope. It's a time of it's exciting. You're looking forward to the season for both the Flames and the Kings. And unfortunately, this has cast a bit of a pall over all of that. So, look, all we can say is, thoughts and prayers to her family. And, she left a mark in a short space of time. We can say that. And just a great person taken too soon.
Special, special figure in the Australian basketball community and the WNBL what she achieved on and off the floor, and there was so much that we didn't get to see of her. I have no doubt she'd be in the WNBA right about now. She should be gearing up for another Olympic campaign in a few years' time. But she's an Opal. They can never take that away. There's nothing you can say. It's horrific. Absolutely horrific.
Yeah.
Callous to switch from that back to hoop matters, but we'll try. The Wildcats going over into the Asian market. And this is something that Mark Arena's been discussing, that the NBL should look at Asian expansion again. Now, we've of course tried this before with the infamous Singapore Slingers. Is this something potentially to revisit?
It's going to take a lot more than just, you know, playing these tournaments, and which, by the way, are a great thing, you know. And I think it's great that we're in Asia and we're a part of it. The Boomers are playing in FIBA Asia tournament, and that's, yeah, you know, we're the superpower of the region. I've said that before. Having the Boomers in there is only going to enhance the quality of basketball throughout the region ultimately, because it's going to force everybody else to try and catch up. No easy feat, but at least, you know, that it's, you want to keep driving the sport forward in the Asian region, which of course is, look, it's a gigantic market. I mean, you're talking about billions potential viewers. Whether or not you can get, I think they just have to be really, really careful and really study it and study the history of the Slingers and, you know, why they failed. You know, there were a number of reasons. The whole Slingers situation was done very quickly. I mean, people, you know, who were around at the time, like myself, remember that was essentially, it was the Hunter Pirates who folded, and you know, they needed, you know, they wanted the license to go somewhere. So it ended up, you know, it was Singapore became an option, but it never worked because we, you know, it was an Australian team in a country that, you know, it was a token Asian presence on that team at the time. But yeah, I mean, they never had the, they didn't really have the resources to make it work. It was hideously expensive, obviously, from the flights back and forth. And so whatever they do, I don't know whether an Asian team would ever play in the NBL, in all honesty. I think it's more going to be that you get the NBL involved in some sort of, you know, EuroLeague equivalent in Asia, whatever that looks like. So you're playing against, you know, in tournaments against the best of the B League, the best of the CBA, the best of the Korean Basketball League, the best of the PBA.
Go down there again.
I'm not going to go, but you know what I mean.
And, how is Kai Sato these days?
You know, look, I mean, look, say what you want, and I've said plenty about the Philippines and gotten myself in horrendous trouble about it, but I've also said, you know, that the one thing you can't deny is that the passion for the sport, and they watch in their droves. It's not just about the NBA. They love the PBA over there. So how do you tap into that? How do you tap into what is becoming a really potent, growing league in Japan? How do you tap in to the behemoth that is the CBA? So it's all these are all good ideas to get Australian basketball and the NBL involved in all of this. But in terms of having an Asian team compete on a regular basis in the National Basketball League, yeah, I think it's a long way away if it ever happens. And I'd, in all honesty, I'd be skeptical. I'd be more thinking that the idea of competing in some sort of EuroLeague type of tournament and really building that up. And I know they've had that idea, the East Asia Super League, that I think is still around. And there was talk we should go over there. But, yeah, something maybe a bit more solid, I guess, is what I'm saying. It's going to be tournament play, but we need to keep up the connections. The Wildcats have done a fabulous job with that over many, many years. So they, you know, Andrew Vlahov drove that when he was there, I remember. So, yeah, it's a great thing. We play these Asian teams both at a national level, out at a club level. Hopefully it continues. But, yeah, having an Asian team play regularly, whether that be from Indonesia, whether that be from Singapore again, whether that be from Malaysia, Korea, it would be problematic, I think. And it would require a hell of a lot of money, which, you know, we've got money in the sport, but not that kind of money right now.
How about we get our own backyard in order before we start having these grand ambitions? And while it is doing really well, it's a delicate ecosystem that if you were to tip too much water into the cart, it could very easily spill over and we've got all the problems again. So avoid. If you want to try and form a Champions League with these other Asian nations, go right ahead, but don't include it into the NBL. We don't need another Singapore Slingers. I don't think that that's something that would be even feasible, probably for another decade and a half minimum. So I'm all for branching out and trying new ideas. Let's just make them feasible ideas. Before we get to the picks, just back on preseason predictions, I wanted to get your reaction to this in real time. On NBL Overtime tonight, Matt McQuaid, Damon Lowry's brought out his all-NBL first team. Cooks, Luala Chul, Harvey, Hamilton, and Jackson Cartwright. No Bryson, no KD.
Yeah, I'm sure he really believes it too. Yeah. Nah, well, I think most people would know I'm not a Damon Lowry fan. I haven't been for a long time. So, yeah, look, he's entitled to his opinion. I'll leave it at that.
Just wanted to drop that in there. Let's go to the picks. Round one. Let's talk ball on the court. We've got five games to get us underway. We start at My State Bank Arena. Tasmania hosting Melbourne United. The rivalry continues. The Bass Strait battle. This is going to be a pretty tantalizing way to get things started. While it is not yet as rich as the rivalry long-term as Sydney Illawarra has been, it's not quite at the level yet, I think, of historically a Perth Adelaide or even a Melbourne Southeast Melbourne. This is a rivalry that has been just wonderful to watch grow, and I think it's the perfect way to get things started.
Yeah, in the last four seasons, and you talked about the Sydney Illawarra rivalry, which is very one-sided at the moment as far as the Hawks are concerned. They're dominating, and you know, what I find interesting about that is the fact that when the Kings played the Hawks in the grand final series in 2005, it was the most one-sided grand final series in NBL history. So, but when Melbourne have played Tasmania in the final series, and then most memorably, of course, in that amazing championship series that went all the way, that was just two teams incredibly well matched, beating the hell out of each other. Wasn't one-sided at all. And that's just an amazing tribute to Scott Roth and that organization that they've, and we've talked about this many times, but they've managed to build these teams that go toe-to-toe with the best that we've got in this country, i.e., you know, the team that is championship or bust in Melbourne United. So it's become a fantastic rivalry in a very short space of time, and it will continue to grow, I'm sure. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to this. It's a fascinating matchup. They're so hard to predict, these games, in the early stages, particularly probably rounds one and two, I think, maybe even three, before you start getting a bit more of a handle on things as far as where these clubs could potentially go this season. Obviously, we haven't seen, you know, these guys in a genuine NBL game yet, the blitz notwithstanding. But, you know, obviously teams hold back, and we've already talked about the fact that there are a lot of players, missing from their teams at the blitz. So we really can't use that as any kind of idea of what's going to happen in this ball game. Sellout crowd. They don't like Melbourne. Chris Golding's going to cop it as per usual. Can't wait to see, you know, Tyson Walker, his matchup with Tiger Campbell, who's got a little bit of Kendrick Davis about him, I think. So Yeah, and then obviously, yeah, Milton Dawe coming back to the club where he won a championship with, and then you know that matchup of Magne against the Melbourne front line is going to be fascinating as well. So, yeah, I mean he's going up against particularly a Jesse Edwards, you know, who's going to be interesting for them because he's a Marcus Lee type. So they're kind of, you know, they'll be familiar with that style of player. But yeah, really looking forward to it. If I had to pick, I'll lean towards Tasmania because it's, you know, their opening game. But doesn't mean I don't think Melbourne's going to be a massive, you know, they're going to be a serious contender this year. I think we already have said that. But I do sort of like Tasmania first up.
I'm going the other way. I'm going to go with Melbourne to get a first night W. I said last week I've got them as my title favourites for a reason. Tyson Walker excites me greatly. This is a serious ball team. And even though it's down in Tasmania, a place that they have struggled, I can see them getting this one on night one. But these are so hard to pick in the early couple of weeks.
100%.
Although the next game is a little bit easier because it's at Spark Arena in Auckland and it involves the New Zealand Breakers and the Brisbane Bullets.
Back in black, the Breakers and this new little Bullets team, they couldn't have picked I suppose they could have sent them to Perth. But it's with this New Zealand team, that the theme is putting the New Zealand back in the Breakers, and we've spoken about that. And yes, they've got, you know, some import guys that particularly Isaiah Brockington, I think, is going to be a superstar in this league. And Robert Baker looks really impressive up front for them. So, you know, you add those to, a Karim Lopez, who potentially is on his way to the association. You've already got PJC there. Hopefully that rib injury is settled down and he'll be fine. It's probably the battle of the backcourts that's the most fascinating thing because you've got PJC and Isaiah Brockington against a former league MVP in Jalen Adams and Javon Freeman-Liberty, who was also very impressive in the preseason so far. So, yeah, hopefully Spark Arena, they pack the joint out. You know, I would love to see that happen and get New Zealand basketball humming again because, the league's been better when New Zealand's been good or, you know, at least in contention. And they want to get off to a fast start, I'm sure, and put leave the debacle of last season well and truly behind. So, yeah, I think they get this and I think they get it pretty convincingly.
Yeah, same here. And it's not just another opportunity for me to dunk on the Bullets. That's not what this is yet. This is that I don't think a lot of teams are going to have success in New Zealand this season. Just from judging from what I've seen and the way that things are shaping up, their story is going to be how they fare on the road, but I think they're going to claim a lot of scalps at home this season. Putting the Kiwi back into the New Zealand Breakers, it's about time. I can't wait to see those black uniforms back on the floor. The black and blue, the New Zealand Breakers are back. Not a moment too soon. They get it done here. Saturday, we go to... Well, that game should mention that is on a Friday night, by the way, the New Zealand Brisbane Bullets game. But that's a 5:30 Australian Eastern Standard Time start. So it's 7:30 local time in Auckland. Saturday afternoon, Southeast Melbourne Phoenix will relight the fire pit against the Cairns Taipans. It's a shame that the Phoenix are already 0-1 to start the season because usually, Matt, the NBL schedule makers, they don't put too many feet wrong. They're usually pretty good. But the Phoenix have copped a stiff one here because
I know where you're going with this.
15 minutes earlier than when the game gets underway at John Cain Arena, about 500 metres across the road, the ball will be bounced for Collingwood's preliminary final against the Brisbane Lions.
Go Pies. I'll throw that in twice.
There'll
be 99,000 people, and there'll be close to 99,000 people there. Yeah.
They're on a hiding to nothing with this one.
I've been down in Melbourne. I know you have, obviously, when they've got stuff going on, whether it's at Rod Laver, whether it's at, you know, Margaret Court, wherever it might be, and the MCG, and then Amy Park, you know, right next door. They've had things going on. It's a nightmare. It's an absolute nightmare. Yeah, that's a shame. You know, look, I don't think it could have been avoided. Obviously, they had to start with the Melbourne teams first up because they've got the NBA, they've got the Pelicans coming up later on. And then, you know, the Kings have got their thing going on with the EuroLeague teams, Panathinaikos, Partizan Belgrade. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think you can blame them for it. I mean, I suppose maybe they could have had it up in they could have had this game up in Cairns, perhaps, to kick things off. But maybe there's a venue availability issue. I'm not sure. So, yeah, that's probably the only downer. You know, look, I hope they get, 5,000 to 6,000? What do you think?
I would say if they got 4,500, it'd be a win.
Mm.
Because it's Collingwood.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, that's trying to conquer Everest at this time of year. They would have hiding to nothing. And it's just unfortunate when it comes to circumstance. Like you said, maybe they could have done it in Cairns. Maybe you give them the Thursday game to start the season. I understand why you've gone Tassie-Melbourne to begin, but yeah, this was always going to be a hard sell. And it's not like you would have gotten away from it by putting it on the Friday either, because there's another prelim final there. It's just the curse of the Melbourne sporting team when the AFL is ramping up into finals mode.
Yeah, it is what it is. And we always have that clash with the NRL and AFL finals starting the season when we do. So it unfortunately can't be avoided. But this is really fascinating. I think Cairns, I'm not sure whether Andrews will play. I think he's arriving. I don't know whether he's going to arrive in time, based on what I've seen in social media. And even if he does arrive in time for the game and is able to dress for it, I don't know whether he's going to be making that much of an impact coming off the plane. Well, it's happened before historically. We know Bobby Locke being the most famous example of that, but we're in a way different time period, clearly. So it's fascinating because it's what we talked about last week, Julian, is that we really don't know what to make of this roster of the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix. There's been obviously some import changes. They've got a European as one of their imports, which is unusual. He's a little bit unicornish, if you want to say that, because of the length, you know, the extreme length, the ability to step out and hit the outside shot, the long arms and everything else. But probably yet to be seen whether he plays D. But look, he's got a defensive-minded coach. John Brown, is that going to work? He's an older guy. He's obviously probably at this stage of his career more of a role player type. And then Hunter Maldonado, who hasn't really set the world on fire, but has been good. Don't get me wrong, but sort of hasn't had the highlights of perhaps some of the other import guards. So, and then, you know, obviously there's a lot of positives to be had. You know, Iron Foxwell, of course, being huge among them. You know, his basic ability to lead a team now, as we've seen, and I love the confidence he's showing. You know, certainly playing for his country has done him the world of good. And I think he's a great talent. And again, I'm just very impressed with him. So hopefully, you know, Coach King gives him a ton of burn, which I'm sure he will. On the other side of things, you know, from Cairns, obviously, you know, that we've waxed lyrical about how they built this team. And so it's, you know, the official debut of Jack McVay. He's going to be a leader for that program in so many ways. And we know all about the great outside shooting. He can rebound. He can defend. Just a leader right across the board. And, you know, he's going to be really good for this program. There's no two ways about that. I'm a huge fan of Admiral Schofield. I think he's going to be an impact player. Obviously, you know, losing Sam Wardenberg is really unfortunate. You know, but they're well taken care of in one respect, because bringing in Marcus Lee, it's very fortuitous. You know, so he will fill that the loss of Wardenberg, obviously. But you know, and then really looking forward to seeing how Rain Smith competes at NBL level. You know, he's got all the potential in the world, that kid. Outstanding perimeter shooter, and when he gets on a roll, he just doesn't seem to miss. So, look, they're going to – look, with the probability that Andrews won't be there, and even if he was, it's going to take him some time to sort of fit into this program, you know, coming in on short notice as he is. Oh, I think South East Melbourne gets this, and I think it'll be a high-scoring game. I think it'll be up and down. I think both teams like to they'll like to play at pace. So it should be a highly entertaining battle, but I think the Phoenix will get the job done.
I'm going with the Phoenix at home with the home court factor. I think this will be an entertaining ball game. It's just a shame that not many people are going to watch it live. Make sure you watch it on demand, though, or listen to the call on the collective while you're watching the footy. It's just, you know what? This might be karmic payback that the basketball gods for the fact that the Phoenix managed to get their open air game in last year and United's was rained out. So, this might be the basketball gods just resetting things down at Melbourne Park. Fascinated to see what happens this year, by the way, with the open air games. They're not too far after the other. The Phoenix are on the Saturday night, and then Melbourne United's is the day before Christmas Eve. So we'll see if one or both get away this year, but that's in December. Perth and Tasmania is the night game, 8 p.m. Saturday night. And, well, there's no excuse not to be watching this.
Yes.
Because, don't worry, the Collingwood game's going to be well and truly over. And I know there's people screaming at me, well, what about the NRL? Yes, I know, Canberra, Cronulla, but this is one worth setting some time aside for.
Well, it's game one of the post-Bryce Cotton era. Yeah, and big changes. It's going to be strange to see Bryce not running out there at RAC Arena. And it's a new-look team. Obviously, with the additions that they've brought in, we talked about Joe Lawala-Chool coming in, and he obviously is going to be an incredible rim protector. He's going to change a lot of shots, not just block a lot of shots. He's going to change a lot of shots, and he's a guy that is a real difference maker for that program, in my opinion. I've already talked about, you know, the fact they brought back those two imports. I think Dylan Windler, now healthy, hopefully, for the season, is going to show what his capability is. And he's a guy who's played in the NBA. Christian Doolittle, everyone knows I'm super impressed with as a great two-way player. I love the guys they brought in to come off the bench and add a bit of defensive steel in Latmayan and Sonny Dech. And then the guy that in his first game hit 7 threes, had 8 assists, I think, and a bunch of rebounds, Mason Jones, from the G League championship winner with the Stockton Kings and the NBA G League, the MVP of the G League championship series, and came out in that game against the Japanese team and showed why so many people are so high on him and why he's going to be an outstanding addition to this roster, which I think is actually a roster that can win a championship this year. And I think that's what they've got to be aiming at. And I think, look, one thing we talked about with Tasmania, or we didn't talk about actually, was losing Sean McDonald. That's tough. Now, I mean, he was such an integral part of that program, what they were doing, and someone that Scott Roth trusted implicitly, and to lose him is really, really tough for Tasmania. And it's in a game like this, when you've got a guy like Mason Jones, who clearly is going to be a guy that will be a serious impact player. I think it would be a surprise if he wasn't. And it would be a surprise if he wasn't an immediate MVP candidate. I mean, that's how highly I think of him. I love his attitude. I love the size. He, he's that big, solid point guard. That's going to be really tough to defend. He can take you into the post. He can stretch the floor. We know he can shoot the hell out of it. He's a terrific facilitator. He does a lot of things extremely well. So that this is a team I'm very, very high on. I think they're going to come out all guns blazing. Tasmania coming off a game a couple of nights previous. I think for me, this is the Wildcats one to lose. I think they get it pretty convincingly.
Yeah, I think the Wildcats make a statement night one at RAC Arena. New look Wildcats, new look club, new look just in general, new logo, new unis, new everything. They'll make a statement here and win this well. Sunday, Melbourne United, New Zealand Breakers. This is an interesting one because remember the last time that the Breakers went into JCA to face United, they made an absolute mess of them. And then things were never the same again.
Yes.
But this is going to be a fun one to start the campaign for, well, as far as the Melbourne United home opener is concerned. Both sides have got a game under their belt by the time that they get to Sunday. The Breakers at home to the Bullets and United backing up for a road trip to Tassie.
Yeah, and it look, I mean, it won't be an easy road trip, but at least it's only, what is it, about 45 minutes from Hobart across to Melbourne.
On a bad day, yeah.
Yeah, it's, whereas obviously New Zealand, they face that that road trip of about 2.5-3 hours across from Auckland, and Melbourne gets that extra day to prepare as well. So they've got the advantages as far as that's concerned. And they'll be highly motivated. And you talked about it in the season preview, Julian, that that they will be highly motivated full stop this season, but particularly in front of their home fans. It's a Sunday game. There's no AFL games to worry about. Hopefully, one of the Melbourne one of the Melbourne teams, especially the one that wears black and white, gets into the grand final and people are celebrating that. But hopefully it should be a big crowd at John Cain. It's an exciting new look Melbourne team. Yeah, we talked about the fact they've made a lot of changes, got younger, got quicker, I think. So, and they're in a better spot to be able to play the kind of, high intensity, high paced game Illawarra did, and that they couldn't really match at the end of the day. They just got worn out in that championship series ultimately. So I think, they want to, get that high octane offense humming early. They've got the pieces to do it. Talked about Tyson Walker, another guy who could be potentially an MVP candidate. Chris Golding, he's as reliable as they come. You know exactly what you're going to get from Mr. CG43. And Shea Ely, obviously the leadership, the toughness, the hustle, the intensity, the facilitation, all of it. Probably the best defensive player pound for pound in the league right now. And then obviously Finn Delaney playing against his old club, which will be interesting as well. So, and then, the fans get a first look at Jesse Edwards, who's should be a bit of an upgrade over Marcus Lee, at least at the offensive end of the floor. So, yeah, it's hard to go past Melbourne, isn't it? Yeah, it really is. Look, I mean, PJC, he's done some major damage against United. Now, he's been a tough matchup for them over the journey, but I just think Melbourne, just too many weapons and too highly motivated to get off to a good start in their beloved home court. And I think they get the Breakers by double figures.
It's a tricky start for United down in Tasmania, and then the Breakers, who we know can make a mess of them at times. Going back to Melbourne Cup Eve last year, they utterly blew them out of the building. But this is going to be, like I said, how, and Cairns fall into this category too. I mean, every team needs to have a good return when it comes to playing on the road, but especially those who have to travel extra. We kind of take it for granted with Perth because of how professional they've been for such a long time. But clubs like the Breakers, who are rediscovering their identity, and Cairns as well, coming from the far north of Queensland, it's pivotal for them to get a good road return. So if they can jag one here, the Breakers, it sets up their campaign beautifully. But on the other side of things, you look at United's home record last year, and I know this is a weird thing to say about a team that were one game away from a championship, but during the regular season, they were 8-6 at John Cain.
Mm.
And then you go into the championship series and they lost twice on their home floor, including an opportunity to win the title on their home court.
Yeah, remarkable.
So they've got to get that fortress back.
Yeah. But what's fascinating about that, I mean, you say that, ironically, the team with the best home record last year was the South East Melbourne Phoenix at 10-4. So, you know, Illawarra was 9-4 at home. So, yeah, I mean, it is fascinating, isn't it? You know, that and I think we're probably going to see most, I mean, Melbourne finished because they had such a good road record, as you said. But Melbourne, you know, I mean, finished 8-6 and still finished second place in the ladder. It could be something similar again because this competition is just so evenly matched this season. It's, hard to pick a winner.
I would think that they would be setting themselves an expectation of double digits when it comes to home wins.
You would think so, yeah. I agree with that. Yeah.
Especially when you mentioned the home the away record that Melbourne had last year, 10-4, so strong. The Hawks, 10-5 with their road games. And this is thrown out a little bit because of Hoops Fest as well. But those are the little one percenters that count for a lot when we get to March. And especially with the fact that United have had now two opportunities in consecutive years to win the championship on their home floor and come up short both times.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
So there's something in that. And it starts with games like this where, you know, if they're down just a little bit, the Breakers can easily see a world where the Breakers go in there and win. But if they can take care of business, the weapons, like you said, they'll be too strong, you would think, for United to drop this one and they'll start the right way. But that's going to be such an interesting little side plot to this entire season for mine, is Melbourne at home. Because maybe they, more than anyone else, because of the fact that they have that January period on the road because of the Australian Open, they know how to galvanise themselves on the road because they have to do it every year. It's just a part of the way that their season is structured. So for them, the missing link has been their home record.
Mm. They need to bank. There's no question. What you're talking about is banking wins. It's going to be critical. And like I said, Julian, we're making some prognostications here for round one, but one thing we do know, there's going to be an upset and people will raise their eyebrows and say, holy hell, how did that happen? But I think this year, more than any other, because of how evenly matched it seems, at least on paper, and we don't know until it actually, you know, the first ball is thrown up. We don't know how it's all going to transpire. But I do believe that there will probably be, you know, a lot of people with, look, put it this way, betting on this season is going to be a nightmare. It really is, especially in the first, like, probably three rounds. I might have said two earlier. I think probably three, maybe even four. It's going to take a while to shake things out. And even then you're going to get these crazy results. It's setting up for, you know, the one of, if not the most intriguing season on record.
I will be surprised if we know the makeup of the six until that last game is played between Perth and Adelaide on February 20.
Oh, it'll come down to that again. Yeah. And it'll come down to percentage as well. So there'll be the games within the games, right? You know, that whole thing about if you're up 20, not going for another shot, you know, because you don't want to embarrass the other team. But that kind of gets thrown out because of the whole business about for and against and how it actually counts and in splitting teams. And it could be the difference between making a play-in game and, you know, going home for the holidays.
So there are your picks for round one. We're in agreeance on four of the five. We only differ on Tasmania and Melbourne. We'll see who gets the early jump as far as our picks count for the season. But how good is it to finally have the campaign back, the NBL back, after what was such an exciting campaign last year, the season, it delivered in so many areas. And the fact that we're going into a new NBL season with Illawarra about to go in as defending champions and raise a banner, that's just wonderful in itself. It's so close. The margin for error this season is thinner than it has ever been.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've seen a lot of close NBL seasons in my time, clearly. But yeah, it's legitimate that you look at this right now, and it's, you can make cases for a whole bunch of teams, and that there will be teams. Look, as much as we rag on them, in particular you, look, you could certainly make a case that the Brisbane Bullets could be improved.
I want them to be improved.
For all we know, yeah, of course. For all we know, Stu Lash could be another Justin Tatum. Honestly, he could be.
Yeah,
we don't know that. We're only, you know, we're sort of looking at this from the outside. We're projecting forward. You know, we scratch our head about that whole, you know, quote, worldwide coaching search process, which was anything but. But
they had a rod for their own back with that.
Yeah. That aside, look, you know, we've already talked about Jermaine Freeman Liberty's, he's a gun. Yeah. Who knows? Jalen Adams could turn into Sydney Kings MVP Jalen Adams again. And wouldn't that change life for them? You know, so, and Casey Prather could be Casey Prather again. So, look, you know, even them, and we've already talked about Cairns, and, you know, they were the wooden spooners last year. And does anyone honestly believe they're going to lose 15 straight again with that group that they've assembled? Come on. That's not going to happen. So, yeah, for all those reasons, I think clearly New Zealand's going to be a hell of a lot better. Love that backcourt. You know, Copenhagen's going to be better for the run first up. Perth losing Bryce obviously is a massive deal. However, how they've rebuilt that team, I think, has been highly impressive. And then, of course, the giant elephant in the room is Adelaide with Bryce Cotton, Montrezl Harrell, and all the, you know, Zylan Cheatham and all the superstars, DJ and Isaac, and, you know, unbelievable starting unit that they've got. And, you know, how's that all going to come together? And could they be, you know, could they surpass Illawarra as one of the greatest offensive teams that offensive juggernaut, the Hawks, were in NBL 25? So, yeah, it's just, and the Kings, you know, I mean, what the hell is going to happen to them? You know, that whole scenario with Lau Pepper going down, with Spurgeon going down, how is that going to impact them? And are they still a championship level team? Clearly people think they are. I don't think they are right now, but who knows? You know, he's, say what you want, and Brian Gorgian's still the GOAT in my eyes. So if there's anyone that can take that group, even with the adversity they've already been hit with, and make them into a contender and take them far this year, it's that man. So, yeah, there's just so many amazing stories. And then people, look, are people stupid? Writing off Illawarra, like, why are you giving them more bulletin board material? They're already the champs. They're, and you're coming back and you're disrespecting them already? Are you nuts? With that team, with that fan base, with that home court that's now turning into a fortress? Wow.
Yeah, it's not very, very intelligent stuff. We've done this repeatedly. The prognosticators ignoring clubs like Illawarra and Tasmania, and they make them look like fools every time. So why would we expect anything different this year? Especially when Illawarra are the champions, guys. But yeah, let's put the Sydney Kings in the top two with a banged up roster. But we could be completely wrong by this time next week, which is
absolutely
the beauty of this league. Next week, we're back with you. We've got a big name. We're not going to tell you who, but we've got a big name that's going to be joining us.
Oh, huge name.
Program. So I think this is one you're going to want to get your ears around when it drops next week. And for those asking, yes, the collective, which you and I have been part of at various points, they will be back covering the NBL this season. They are covering both games in Melbourne this weekend, Saturday evening, Southeast Melbourne up against the Cairns Taipans from 5 o'clock, and then from 2 o'clock on Sunday, Melbourne United and New Zealand. So that is where you can find a bit of extra live content for this weekend on the collective, collective.net/au. We're back next week. And by then, we're going to probably have to rip up all of our predictions, because that's how the NBL usually works. So it starts Thursday night in Tasmania. It continues throughout the weekend. The Breakers back in black. Melbourne United, New Zealand Breakers. Perth Wildcats, life after Bryce. It all begins now.